Blog Talk Radio.
There's some dangerous large carnivore out there.
Yeah, I saw that bird kick a young deer off the road and fly away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and went back, and that's when I thought I saw one.
For a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
Say your prayers and go on. Don't forget my son to include everyone. I suck you in, all within. Keep you free from sin till the Sandman he comes. Sleep with one.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Monster X Radio, where X marks the spot for everything cryptid. It's Sunday, July 13th, 2014. Johnny Bigfoot here. With me tonight is my co-host Crystal and Gunner. Hello.
Hello.
Well, let's start off by talking about some Bigfoot news, and then we'll welcome our guest. Oh, and we will be giving away some more Sasquatch coffee after the break. Just be in the chat room for a chance to win. We'll be adding your names to the random name picker throughout the first hour. So what's happening in Bigfoot news?
Well, I just read this on Guy Edwards' Bigfoot Lunch Club website today. Apparently, they're filming the Bigfoot versus the Nazi movie in Utah this November. And the Utah government gave them $100,000 to help finance the movie. So,
really?
I'm looking forward to that.
Nice. Yeah, I guess it's kind of the year of the Bigfoot movies.
It is. It looks like they're working on making a movie out of the book Eve. She's got a couple other books that are. They're talking about doing two movies with it. So, if you haven't had a it's pretty good.
And that's
different than the Monster Squatch genre.
So you've read the book Eve?
I have.
Okay. I'm interested in it. I would like to give it a look.
She's got a Facebook page. It's one of the ways you can get a hold of her. So I'll post
that. Yeah, I saw that. So is the what is the book Eve based on?
The idea is that a gal gets lost in the woods basically and goes and lives with family of squatches for a period of time. So.
Well, that sounds interesting. It is. That sounds different then from what we normally see. I saw last year I watched the movie, the name escapes me now, Letters from the Big Man.
Oh, yeah.
that was more along the lines of a peaceful cohabitation type thing.
Yeah, the book's got good reviews.
Yeah, it's a good read. It's pretty quick. I posted
I'll have to check it out, and we're going to have her on the show too next month.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So check out our calendar. We're slowly adding things to it.
Well, they have filmed a short of the book, and they're taking it to the Sundance Film Festival. So, looking to build it into a feature, I guess.
Well, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Is that out in California?
She's in California. I don't know where the Sundance Film Festival is. That the one that's in? I'm not sure where it is.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of it. It's a pretty big deal. That's awesome. Yeah, and then we got Finding Bigfoot tonight. We got our friend Paul Halsey.
I saw that's exciting.
I saw Cliff posted on his Facebook page that it's a possible, thermal video of a Squatch. So hopefully that's there's something to that.
Yeah. Paul's had a couple encounters, and he took Wild at Heart, Stephanie Henderson, out squatching.
I remember.
Last year. And they recorded some pretty interesting vocals.
I never heard the recordings.
Yeah, she played them for me once, and
I'm
not sure if
them.
They went around Facebook or not, but, he's the real deal. He's been doing this a long time. He's an honest, good guy, a Bama Buckster. He had his own blog talk radio show for quite a while there.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
I think it was being shared upon request, which is probably a good idea for something like that, especially within the Facebook realm of things, because, you don't want to share freely and be accused of, whatever. But I do. I remember hearing of there being a recording, and I think that, upon request, they were willing to share with you.
Yeah. It scared Stephanie pretty good. She was sitting in that truck. They were clenching.
Yeah.
And they were sitting in the back of a pickup truck.
Oh.
And I think Paul had done some calls, and they started getting responses. And earlier that day, they had found some interesting stick structures, too. So it was kind of led up to the nighttime event. But this is a different incident where he's gotten the thermal footage. And I think he had a full-on sighting as well before that.
I'm excited to hear about that, if you can ask about.
Yeah. So is there any other news in the Bigfoot world?
I expected maybe a little more throughout this past week. Just because, last weekend was the holiday weekend, right?
Right.
I expected lots of reports this past week to have come in. People were out, people were, doing their things. I thought, maybe I just assumed that holiday weekends are active.
Yeah.
Well, I know our group stayed out of the woods on the weekend of the 4th, so I was back Friday night. A couple of us went out. Have an interesting recording of. Now, we're sitting in camp around the campfire, and the gal that was with me, Jess, had her back to the woods, and we're just sitting around BSing. And all of a sudden, there was a loud crash, like right behind her. She's probably, less than 10 feet from the woods. It she flew. She grew wings and flew across the campfire on the other side of me, like shielded herself. I got a good recording of it. And the next morning, I think what it was there was a good, maybe a 4.5-inch size rock that was in the area where we'd heard the crash. And it's not a rocky area, but there's some roads around there that have some good-sized rock in it, and it looked like the same kind of rock. So, and we had radios in our tents, and I actually slept in my Jeep, but about 3 o'clock in the morning, she got on the radio and said, "Daddy, I just heard a knock." So I rolled down my window, and within a couple minutes, I heard a long moaning call from the south, and then another one, so then it was pretty quiet, but I'm still reviewing the recording. But I think I've got a couple other knocks there, and what the weird thing is, it sounds like after both of them, there's like a little, not real loud, but strange, like after both times, it sounds like a knock. It sounds like, you know, ape-like, like... We've had that before.
Nice.
So do you record upon entering camp and continue to record throughout the entire stay?
We do. We learned to do that because we've had surprised a few times when
I've heard plenty of stories where a person either didn't turn on fast enough or shut off too early. So that would probably, depending on what you're looking to capture, and also depending on how long you stay in an area, that I talked to one person about how tedious going through audio recordings can be. If I think some people put audio recorders out into the field and let them set for however long the battery will allow for. And, you know, then you just have hours upon hours upon hours of audio to go through and, that's probably tedious.
I can attest to how tedious it is, but I'll multitask. I'll clean up my email while I'm listening or, do housework
As far as your spot, did you choose that based on BFRO sightings or just you think it would be a good spot?
It was actually based on a report that was initially went through the BFRO, and then it was actually the daughter of one of our team members that had the initial encounter where they had something whooping on at them for like 2 hours. There was like 720-somethings then the next night it started. It went for about 20 minutes, and it's funny because one of the gals that was in the group like said, "Shut up, Bigfoot," and it stopped. So apparently Bigfoot has some familiarity, knows when to knock it off. But then the next weekend, so the gal went home and talked to her dad, and he went back up with a friend of his the next weekend, and they recorded some audios back and forth, and then got a hold of the BFRO, one of the gals her and her husband went up and investigated it the following weekend, and they got more audio. And then Larry, who's the father of the original witness, got the Bigfoot bug, and it's been going up there. He's been up once a month every month since. And then I got involved this last September. First time I went up there, we had an epic, crazy night. And I went up there having no expectations, but where we heard, screams and whoops and for like a 2-hour period, which culminated with, like, I call it the crescendo, where it was, like, there was a howl, and I was listening through bionic ears, and at the end, it sounded like samurai chatter. There was a howl with some chattering underneath it, and I, like, threw my headset off so I could hear it, and, like, the whole time I, you know, could it be people? I don't hear any vehicle noise. You know, there's nobody talking. There's either these odd audios or nothing. And that when I heard my immediate, you know, response when I heard the chattering was like trying to pick a word that I understood. Like, could that be English? Or maybe it is people. But it was like, no. And then it went silent. It was pretty trippy. And then I was hooked on the area, so we now go out there about every week or, you know, every couple weeks, the group of us go out, so.
Sweet. Nice to be in Squatch Central.
Yeah, it's only about an hour drive from my front door, so that makes it pretty nice.
Okay. Cool. Well, I guess let's get to it here then. Tonight's guest is the founder of the Ohio-based group, the Janosko Project, and a longtime friend of Monster X Radio. We've had him on a few times before. Welcome, Paul Hayes, to the show. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's up?
Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Crystal?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Paul.
So what's happening? What's happening? Hey, Gunner, what's up?
Hey. How's things in Ohio?
Man, it's hot today, man. We supposed to get some thunderstorms come through, but just sprinkled a couple times. That was it. And it's hotter than hell over here. I'm actually down in my basement because it's like 68 degrees down here.
Wow. So the Squatch are sitting in the shade today, huh?
Man, I'm telling you. Man, they got to be hiding out somewhere because, you know, I mean, yeah, there's been some reports, you know, pop up here and there, you know, from Ohio, mainly a little farther south of me, but, man, anything around here, it's just kind of died off.
Has it?
Yeah, I haven't heard really too much here around me other than, you know, when we had the festival last month, there was about three people that came up to me and telling me, you know, about some interesting stuff. And actually not too far from me. I have to get a hold of them. And there's one gentleman, I got to get a hold of him. He said he would take me out to an area where him and a friend of his were actually out in the woods, and they kept hearing something, you know, like up on top of the hill. He said then the next thing they know, this huge tree came flying at them root first. So he said they got the hell out of there. But he agreed, to take me out there, so I got to make arrangements with him. Gosh, what else was there? There was a lady, she has some relatives here not far from me, and I guess they had something really, really large in their barn. I guess the gentleman that lives at the place, he takes his dogs and he puts his dogs in the barn every night. And he went out one night to put the dogs in the barn, and just inside the barn there, I guess they keep a really, really large bag of dog food. And he said he went in the barn and he seen the bag was just ripped open, and there was dog food scattered everywhere. And then there was like a path of dog food that went toward the back of the barn. Well, he started to kind of walk back in there, and he said something really big came flying out of there and damn near ripped the door off the barn getting out. So that lady there, she goes, well, he don't really like to talk too much about it. And so I gave her one of my cards. I said, well, if he wants to talk about it, tell him to get a hold of me, you know. So, but I haven't heard anything, but that'd be interesting.
Wow. So you got cards now, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, every time we do presentations, stuff like that, you know, I give people cards just in case they want to, you know, they want to talk about something but don't want to talk about it in front of a bunch of people, you know. Some people still, they want to some people want to tell, but, you know, they rather have a one-on-one or maybe a phone conversation or, you know, something like that. They don't want everybody hearing it. We come across that a lot, you know.
Yeah, I suppose.
Do
now
people
for,
ever call and give you a report but then refuse a follow-up investigation? Does that happen?
Well, I did have one gentleman. He lived just a little bit south of me, probably about a half-hour drive, something like that. Yeah, he actually got a hold of me and, you know, told me about some experiences that he had because he was, you know, another coon hunter. And he was just telling me about, you know, just a bunch of weird stuff that was going on around his property. And, you know, he said it got so bad, scared him to death. He goes, his dogs actually came back out of the woods running and hopped back in the car. So
that's
he
never
says,
a good sign.
You know, yeah, he said that he's heard, you know, strange howls and stuff like that. And he's an older gentleman. I think he said he was in his 70s. But, you know, he told me, he goes, I haven't been out coon hunting, like, for a long time now, ever since all that. He goes, I don't even go out no more. So whatever it was, you know, scared him. But, you know, he didn't want to, you know, have somebody come out. You know what I mean? He really didn't even want to tell anybody. But what he did, he emailed me and left me his phone number. And I called him and probably talked to him about an hour on the phone. And you hear a lot about coon hunters having, you know, some experiences of, you know, some type or another. And it's like that's, you know, that's one of your main hunters that, you know, say something, you know. And it's like, geez. I did have a guy here, he's, I don't know, maybe 5-10 minutes from me. He did get a hold of me. I'm trying to get back a hold of him to set something up, but he said him and his buddy was actually sitting in the house watching some YouTube videos, and they kept hearing this really, really loud howl. And so they said they stepped outside, and he goes, it was really loud, and it was coming from just inside the tree line, he said, which is about an eighth of a mile away. But he said it was really loud, and he goes, you know, as this thing screamed, you could tell that it was moving. And he said by the time, you know, the starting of the screams to the ending of them, he goes, man, this thing must have traveled a half a mile in a matter of just no time at all. And he said he would actually take me out just to, you know, show me the area and, you know, do an interview thing. But I can't get a hold of him here yet and try to get something set up. But hopefully he calls me back.
Maybe that's another factor in Ohio having so many sightings is you guys have a lot of open land, don't you, between, like, your patches of woods, farms?
Yeah, but, you know, usually what connects a lot of these woods around here is cornfield, you know. It's just like Ohio is just filled with, you know, cornfields and bean fields and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's just, it's like everywhere you look, man, you see corn, you know, this time of year. And it's like it almost, you know, don't matter where you're going, you know, you just look and there's just acres and acres and acres of cornfield. And, you know, hell, once that corn gets, you know, six foot tall, something like that, 5-6 feet, You know, man, these things can move from one area to another, and you'd never even see them, you know.
Suppose use the corn for cover and maybe a little snack.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I hope they have collectors have toothpicks, because that corn always gets stuck in my mouth.
Now, for those who don't know much about the Genasco Project, why don't you tell us a little bit about the project? You know, why you started it. You know, what its purpose is.
Well, you know, I used to belong to another group, you know, and we used to go out and do, you know, expeditions and stuff like that, and then, you know, I kind of decided, you know, I'm moving on, and then in the meantime, I'm moving on, you know, Dan, he was kind of, you know, after me a little bit, you know, he goes, man, start your own group, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I don't know if I have the time for that, you know. So, man, after I thought about it for a couple months, I said, well, we'll give it a shot, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, and so I did. I started a group up March of 2013, so, you know, almost a year and a half old now, but, you know, we got a lot of good members and stuff like that. But, you know, we just started it up just to do, you know, research, just to, you know, we're trying to gather up enough evidence, you know, we're, you know, maybe something worthy of, you know, presenting to mainstream science, you know, just to prove the existence of this creature. But, you know, it's harder than what you think, you know, it's really, really hard. And, you know, it's like our group, you know, we are not pro-kill, you know, we'll never shoot one, you know, we'll never try to kill one, capture one, you know, anything like that. You know, I don't really, you know, I just can't see killing one just to prove that it's out there, you know, I mean.
You already know it's out there.
Yeah, I already know for a fact it's out there. And, you know, so do, you know, thousands of other people that's had sightings, you know. But I just can't see, you know, killing one of these creatures just to prove the science. I mean, if it never gets proven, so what? You know what I mean? Because, you know, people that's had encounters, they already know what they, you know, seen. They already, you know, nobody's going to tell them any different. You know, these things are definitely out there. You know, of course, you got some people that, you know, they'll believe it when they see it, and maybe they'll get their chance, you know, and then you get other people that, you know, just don't believe it at all, you know, which is fine, you know. It's just like anything else. It's just like ghosts and stuff, you know. Some people believe in it, some people don't, and, you know, so, you know, same with, you know, UFOs and all that kind of stuff, but, yeah, I mean,
Did you believe before you had your first sighting?
Oh, yeah, I've always believed that, you know, stuff like that existed. Always, you know, just growing up as a kid, I've always believed that stuff, you know, existed. When I was a kid, I never went out and you know, look for it, because, heck, when I was growing up, you know, in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, yeah, I'm old, so, but when I was growing up, you know, Bigfoot wasn't really a big thing back then anyway. You know what I mean? I mean, you would hear, you know, something, you know, a couple times a year, you know what I mean, but nothing like it is today. You know, this Bigfoot thing is just going crazy here, you know, nowadays. But back then, yeah, you really never heard of people talking about it, you know, talking about seeing one of these things. You know, heck, what was it? You seen Bigfoot on the $6 million man? Remember that?
Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah, you know. But, I mean, other than that, you know, you really never, even though there were sightings back in, you know, the 50s and 60s and, you know, early 70s and stuff like that, you know, people just never talked about it, you know, and you know, never reported it like people report now.
So don't you think that the Internet makes that easier?
Well, I think the, you know, the online stuff, you know, I mean, there's millions of, you know, sightings and just websites and stuff like that. Now you have all these TV shows, you know what I mean? And it's Bigfoot this and Bigfoot that, you know. So I maybe part of it is, you know, is the cause of people coming out with, hey, well, you know what, 30 years ago, you know, I did see something, and, you know, it's coming out a little bit more, you know. But yeah, as far as a kid, I've always believed in all that stuff, Bigfoot and aliens and UFOs. And, you know, I mean, I've actually, not changed the subject here, but I've actually had a UFO sighting back in 1978. And there was like three or four of us there. And this thing hovered above our heads, probably like 200 feet above our heads, you know, and I still never forget that day. And, you know,
wow, that's low.
Even today, if I were to call up my cousin and go, hey, remember that thing we seen, you know, but he'll go, I don't want to talk about it. And he won't talk about it. He'll just say, I don't want to talk about it. And that's the end of the conversation. He will not talk about it. But yeah, there was like three or four of us that witnessed that, you know. Like, I've seen some crazy stuff over the years, you know. I don't know.
I just saw a UFO in October, and I'm fine saying it because it's not something I ever thought about beforehand. UFOs weren't something I even really considered. And I think that the term UFO is actually pretty great. It's right on, an unidentified flying object. And, you know, I don't associate it with alien beings or anything like that. Nothing horrible happened. It was just we saw it, and we couldn't explain it or identify it. We were like, oh, okay. And that was that. And, you know, looking further into it, because once you do see it, then all of a sudden you may have a little bit of an interest. And I found it funny because after that I did go ahead and delve a little bit into the UFO groups and sites and things like that, and I found it very funny that what I saw had actually been reported a lot. The size, shape, colorings, things like that. There's obviously lots of different size,
right,
shapes, and colorings that are reported, but what I saw was actually one that was commonly reported, and not even that kind of, I don't want to say confirmed UFOs, because I don't know what exactly they are, but I thought that that was funny. And I, you know, I don't, so I'm less now, if someone says UFO, I'm less judgmental. Not that I was judgmental of people, but you understand.
Right.
See, someone in the chat room wanted to know what type of evidence your group has collected and what types of methods do you guys use to collect evidence?
Well, you know, we've casted some prints, and, you know, we've actually casted what could possibly be a partial handprint. You know, we have found some hair, and we've never sent it out and had it tested. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of expensive, you know, so, but we still have it. Matter of fact, I think we have two hair samples right now that could possibly be, or, you know, maybe not. You won't know until you have it tested, but maybe one of these days we'll send them out and have a little pocket change, you know. But
I'm talking about that because I actually have a friend of mine that do you know who Cindy Dorson is?
Yeah.
She does hair analysis now for Squatchers, and I'm not sure what, if I'm using, I'm not being politically correct to say Squatchers, but people who investigate research things, but.
Oh, Cindy?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we had her on the show. I liked her. She's a BFRO investigator out west.
Yeah, she's doing it. I mean, she was handing out cards at the Olympic Project when I was up there a couple months ago, so.
The FI kit says her services are free, so, yeah, I might have to get a hold of her and send it out there just to see, you know, what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, as far as any other possible evidence, I mean, other than, you know, stick structures, anything like that, you know, I mean, we'll take pictures of it, you know. Are they Bigfoot related? Maybe, you know. You just don't know, you know, not unless you really see them do it, but, you know, we do have, you know, some audio recordings that we've caught on audio, you know, some howls and, you know, stuff like that. And then, of course, I do have, and I've been sitting on it for, oh, man, probably a year and a half, 2 years maybe. I have a audio recording of some type of weird language, and I really never released it. I had a few people listen to it and try to analyze it and, you know, try to tell, you know, if they could tell what it said or whatever, but, you know, I'm actually still sitting on that, you know, until I can find out, you know, is it possibly, you know, some type of Bigfoot language? But, so that's really, that's the only thing that I'm sitting on right now. I mean, everything else I normally share, but this here was recorded during an expedition, and it was, gosh, like 1:30 in the morning or something like that. And, you know, and kind of, you know, what you heard on the audio is you heard what sounded like bipedal footsteps, then you heard one single whistle, and then you heard this language. You know, I mean, it's only, I don't know, maybe 10 seconds long or something, but, yeah, still trying to figure out what it is.
What about, I think, is the guy's name Scott Nelson? I'm not sure. He's pretty active within Bigfoot research.
I was thinking about getting a hold of Scott just to see if he could do anything at all with it, you know.
He seems pretty able to pick up on what he deciphers as language one way or the other.
Yeah, he's done a lot of audio work, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting a hold of him and seeing what he thought about it, you know.
It's been about a year since you guys had your encounter camping with Dan, hasn't it now?
Yeah, it was June of 2013.
Okay.
That's when Dan had his sighting during one of our expeditions, you know, and, you know, it was him and his wife, Sue, was there. You know, I was there. The landowner's wife was there. The landowner himself was there. You know, and it's like all of us, you know, witnessed this thing. And there's, I have an audio of it. We don't have no video because, you know, with it being around midnight and, you know, this creature was about 120 feet away, something like that. You know, I don't have any way to record anything at that kind of distance at night. So, But what it was, I was up on top of the ridge, and when we got alerted by Dan, because he was down at base camp with Sue and the landowner's wife, you know, I carry a small recorder and just let it record wherever I go, you know. So I had that recorder going that whole time. Even when we got back to base camp, you know, I set the recorder down and actually just forgot all about it, you know, and we're watching this thing for a good 15 minutes anyway.
And you could definitely tell what you were looking at?
Well, yeah, because me and Dan, we were both using night vision. And, you know, you could, with the night vision, you can't see any, you know, fine details, but, you know, you can tell pretty much, you know, size, bulk, you know, movement, you know, stuff like that. But you can't pick
yeah.
out, you know.
I remember Dan did the drawing his rendition of it too as well.
Yeah, he did do like a quick sketch of kind of what he seen. And I mean it was close enough, and there was a little bit, you know, a moonlight. I mean a little bit, you know, where the landowner and his wife, you know, they could actually see this thing, you know, without using a flashlight, anything like that. You know, you could see the large figure, you know. And I know the landowner himself, you know, he's a pretty big guy, and it was really freaking him out. I mean, he was really freaked out about it. But his wife was like the opposite. She was so excited and jumping up and down, and, you know.
Oh, really? What was their take on Bigfoot before this whole incident? Did you contact them to... I know you do a lot of your research on private land.
They contacted me. They heard me talking to another gentleman. We was having a discussion about Bigfoot, you know, and he just kind of listened in on the conversation, and then, you know, then he actually came up to me and goes, "Man, I got something going on, you know. I don't know what it is, but I have something." And you know, he just listened to our conversation and, you know, just kind of piecing things together, you know, and he goes, "Man, you guys are more than welcome to come check it out, because it might be what's hanging around my property." You know, he owned like 100 acres, I think it was, and you know, part of it is swamp area, and you know, he had some natural springs and, you know, plenty of deer, and pretty much surrounding his whole property is nothing but, you know, cornfields and a fruit farm, and I mean there's just so much around that area to eat, it's not even funny.
So, Paul, do you guys have a particular, like, site that you go to regularly that you guys go out on expeditions? And are your expeditions, are they all private expeditions, or do you do any public expeditions?
Well, most of our stuff is on private property. I prefer it, you know. Yeah, Salt Fork is an hour from me, and yeah, there's been, you know, many sightings down there. I'm just not into the public park type thing, you know what I mean? Well, Beaver Creek's only about an hour from me, and there's been sightings up there, but I just assume do it on, you know, private land. That way I know, you know, nobody else is out there, and, you know, if I hear something, you know, the places that we go are normally out, way out, in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, the chances of someone else being out there hooping and hollering or beating on trees or, you know what I mean, things like that,
sure.
You know, is more slim than, you know, than it is like at Salt Fork. I mean, Salt Fork, there's constantly, you know, tons of people out there, you know, just out. I mean, you can even drive down an old road, it isn't even a road anymore, down Salt Fork, and you know you'll run into somebody back in there. You can drive back in there 2 miles and still run into somebody, you know what I mean? It's just that many people, and I'm just kind of not into that. You know, I'd rather do it on private land and, you know, deal with the landowner and, you know, just do things like that. That's what I prefer.
How do you get in touch with the landowner? Is it upon them contacting you, or do you find a patch or an area that you're interested in and go ahead and approach them out of interest?
No, normally they approach us.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say it was, you know, a year ago I would have been interested in that, but I didn't know how you go about approaching a landowner and asking them, hey, can I look for Bigfoot in your yard?
Well, that's one thing you can't really do. You can't, you know, go knock on someone's door and go, excuse me, can I look for Bigfoot on your property?
So when you have a contact, you say, I'm interested in your resident wildlife. Do you mind if I look around?
Yeah, because if you mention anything about Bigfoot, the guy's going to go, get the hell out of here. You know what I mean?
Well, you could, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, you might get the crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you can, but I'll just move on, you know, and just let the person contact me because, you know, I don't want a 12-gauge in my face or, you know what I mean, anything like that because, you know, some of these people, man, they're crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Some of these people just, they go nuts just you pulling into their driveway, you know? Just some people that protective of their property and, you know, so, yeah. I'd say almost every time we just let them contact us, there's several ways that they find us. I mean, you know, we have, you know, little business cards all over the place because, you know, people suck them things up at the presentations like they're, you know, a little kid in a candy store, you know what I mean? Because, you know, they either have something going on or they've heard something or they have a relative that's seen something or, you know, something. And, man, they take in business cards. And then now that we got the website and I got the email address on the website, you know, I start getting emails. And, you know, they find us, you know. And normally what they do, they'll send an email. And then once you reply to it, you know what I mean, you can give them your number or something. And then they'll call you or they'll go, well, you call me. You know, so when they do the you call me thing, you know, they're still a little hesitant, you know, on making that phone call and reporting something. But, you know, which is a natural thing, you know.
But do you find witnesses when they do get in contact with them, though they're almost relieved to have somebody to share the information with?
Well, yeah, some are. You know, because you have some people that keep a sighting or, you know, whatever, all bottled up for years and don't tell anybody. There's, you know, some people out there that don't even tell family members, you know. And, you know, once they come across someone, well, say like us, that, okay, this is what we do in our spare time, you know, then that person feels more relaxed on telling us things because he knows we're not going to call him stupid or an idiot or you're nuts or, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like he would get from, you know, many other, you know, people, even family members do it, you know? Ah, hell, my wife does it to me, so. Yeah. She go, you're nuts. No, I'm not nuts. I might be old, but I'm not nuts yet, you know. But, you know, you just that's just the way that, you know, the community, Bigfoot community type thing is. You know, that's just the way it is, you know. Some people go, oh, man,
yeah,
hey, that's all right.
A joke.
You got other, you know, then you got other people go, man, this dude's out of it. What have you been smoking, you know, and it's like, you know, these people, you know, they get out there, you know, they see something or they hear something that they never heard in their whole entire life, you know, and it puts a fear into them, and some people don't ever go back to that area, no matter if it's their own property or not, you know. Hell, I had a lady not far from here that, you know, she would take her and her daughters, you know, they own, you know, a little bit of property, and they would go back in the woods, and they'd pitch a tent, they'd build a fire, they'd do the little camping thing out in, you know, the back part of their property, and something happened, you know, in the middle of the night, and it scared them half to death, and believe it or not, that tent has been there for, oh man, at least a couple years now. She won't even go fetch the tent. She will not go back in there. And that tent, last time I seen that tent was laying there, it was all flattened out and it had leaves and, you know, sticks and limbs laying all over it, and she'll come out and tell you. She goes, whatever that was scared the hell out of me, and I will not go back there. My tent is still back there. I will not go get it. I'll just go buy another one, you know. So, you know, and that's on her own property, you know. So, I mean, you know, it's amazing that, you know, these things scare people that bad. And it's not like, you know, it's not like they was face-to-face with this thing. You know what I mean? Just even if it's, you know, couple hundred feet away, or, you know, they hear these loud screams that they never heard before, you know, that scares people to death, but they don't know what it is. And, you know, and you know, the two sightings that I had, you know, one of them, which was Dan's too, you know, I mean, yeah, does it put you on the edge a little bit? Sure. You know what I mean? But I've never felt threatened. Now, I'm sure there's people out there that had encounters that, you know, these things actually chased them out of the area, you know. Well, okay, yeah, I'd be scared too, but personally, I've never felt threatened. You know, the size is intimidating, but, you know, I've never been buff charged. I've never had, you know, trees thrown at me or huge rocks or, you know, anything like that, but.
Well, that's, the Genosqua seems to have a reputation of being Bigfoot's angry cousin.
Yeah, they're said to be more. Yeah, they're said to be more aggressive, you know, and also larger, you know. So, I kind of think that's, you know, what we possibly might have here in Ohio. You know, but hell, I'm game. You know, I'll go out there, and like I say, you know, it does put you on edge a little bit. You know, you're out there at night, you can't see, and then, you know, something, you know, you're going, man, what was that? You know, and so it does make your adrenaline pump a little bit. That's what makes
it
fun.
I can attest to that hearing something crash in the, you know, close proximity to where we were sitting this weekend, and like, whoa. But if that's why we're out there, so it's kind of cool to, you know, you want something to happen, so to give you a little adrenaline.
Yeah, you know, yeah, and then when you can't see, you know, hell, it could have been a deer, but being that you can't see, you know, your imagination goes, man, was that a Bigfoot, or was that a bear, or, you know what I mean, what was that? But, you just kind of, you got to keep your mind under control a little bit, and, you know, you just, every little noise, you know, it's not going to be a Bigfoot, you know, it's just, but some people get out in the woods, and it's like, man, everything they hear, well, hey, did you hear that? That was a Bigfoot. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
No, it was probably a raccoon, you know.
I call that Bigfootitis.
You know what? You know what it is. It just all boils down to, you know, like, power of suggestion is what, you know, it all boils down to, you know. And if you go out into an area where, you know, there's been previous sightings, so you're already thinking Bigfoot before you even get there, you know. And you kind of can't do that. You just got to just keep an open mind and go out and, you know, what you see is what you see, you know. And what you hear is what you hear. You know, that power of suggestion, that's a strong thing, you know, and you just got to kind of put that to the back of your mind a little bit. And, you know, I mean, every time you go out, hell, you're not going to get something every time you go out, you know.
Sometimes, well, the phrase that I heard recently was Bigfoot last. I mean, that when you pass it through the filter, you know, the evidence through the filter is, and it's kind of the burden of proof is on Bigfoot researchers, you know, to prove, to eliminate it, all other possibilities. I think it's really easy to dilute, you know, the research when people come back and haven't done their due diligence, so to speak, on processing evidence. And well, I've seen that where, I was out with a group and they found some scat, and the next time I went out, they were, oh, last time we were here, we found Bigfoot scat. I'm like, no, you didn't. Last time we were here, we found a big pile of crap that got buried in the ground.
Right.
So.
Yeah, you know, the main thing about, you know, researching is, you know, you gotta debunk your own stuff, you know what I mean, before you even put it out there. And, you know, anybody can take a picture and go, ah, look at that, you know, Bigfoot did this or Bigfoot did that. Well, you know what, how do you know? Because you didn't watch him do it. You know what I mean? You didn't watch him do it. So, you know, just like tree structures and stuff. I mean, there's some amazing structures out there, you know. Could they have been man-made? Sure. You know, could a Bigfoot made them? Sure. You know, and there's some that look pretty interesting, but they're natural, you know. And when it comes to them structures, you just got to go out and you got to look around, and you just kind of got to look up and go, you know what, you know, that limb there came from that tree. And you know, you just got to kind of debunk your own stuff, you know, before you really put it out there. But a lot of our...
Yeah, people like to make them. I see those in local woods that kids or adults, or I don't know who's making them, but, you know, this is in a city with 60,000 people. So there's never been a Bigfoot sighting. So I know it's not Bigfoot, but it's interesting that people make them. I mean, they're not hunting in these areas, but for some reason people like to make little teepee stick things.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, some of the stuff's really interesting. I mean, you know, we'll post pictures of stick structures and stuff like that, you know, only because, you know, it's interesting and we didn't think it was, you know, made naturally, you know what I mean? But, you know, you'll never, ever, ever see me put, you know, Bigfoot made this. Because I don't know, because I didn't watch him do it, you know?
Yeah, you some get a lot of them are people, compelling, though.
Yeah, I mean, you get a lot of people, they'll post something and, yep, Bigfoot did this, and Bigfoot did that. Well, how do you know? Well, because I know. Well, how do you know? Did you watch him do it? Well, no. Then, okay, how do you know, you know? It's like a lot of stuff I just... If I see it, I just keep scrolling by, and I just move on to something else. It's not worth my time arguing with it, you know, for an hour and a half. You know,
that's
it's just like
red circle squatches.
Right. You know, I see
that.
Yeah,
we know humans do it. Bigfoot could do it, but you're right. We haven't seen them do it. But some of those are in rural areas where people don't normally go, and I think like the one Paul Holsey posted pictures when he did the expedition with Wild at Heart. Those were some heavy logs. I mean, I'm not sure if one regular dude could do that by himself. I mean, he'd have to be pretty strong and using the right leverage.
Well, you know, I tell you, we did some research on that one private property, and, you know, we was going down, I don't know, a couple times a month or whatever, and there for a while, we was going down every weekend, and, you know, and where the guy's property, it's not where it ends, but part way back to property is a small creek. Well, he built, you know, a bridge to get his ATV across there. And, you know, that kind of starts going into the swampy area. Well, you know, we would constantly, you know, cross that bridge and go back in that swampy area. And then it's like the next time we went down to that bridge, and there was like, you know, these huge trees blocking that small bridge. Hmm. And I went to the landowner and I go, did you put that big log down there by that bridge? And he's going, what are you talking about? And so he came down and he's going, no, I didn't put them there. These things had to weigh 1,000 pounds. He goes, I didn't put them. He goes, man. He goes, what kind of person could move those things? I said, you know, we're not going to be able to move those, you know. They were just so big, you know. And so I don't know, you know. Can I say Bigfoot did it?
Yeah.
No, because they didn't see him do it. But, yeah, that was.
You almost need some corroborating evidence with something like that, you know, footprints,
right.
Hair, yeah, sighting.
Yeah. If you find hair on the log or whatever, and then right next to it you find a huge footprint or something,
now you got
then you, yeah, then you can almost say, well, you know what? I got hair, and I got a print, and I got a huge log. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking Bigfoot might have done that, you know, but yeah, without all that to go with it, you know, yeah, you can
just
sit there and guess.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're reaching the top of the hour here, so let's take a quick break, and then we're going to give away some Sasquatch coffee. 5 minutes.
I'm new beginning.
All right, we're back. Time to give away some coffee.
Do it.
And after we do that, you guys are more than welcome to call in and talk with us. 347-326-9859, and you press 1 to talk. Okay, we got the people in the chat room in the random name picker. Here we go. The winner is 1 pound of Sasquatch coffee. The variety of your choice goes to Angela Hayes.
Angela,
congratulations.
Hayes, come on down. Angela, I'll message you and get your shipping information so we can get you your coffee this week. I have to apologize to Beth, who won last week, because I went back. Apparently, Blog Talk doesn't keep messages in the archive, so I did not have her address. But we're square now.
Cool. Very good. Yes, and you can visit his website at squatchcoffee.com. Check out the different kinds of coffee, and they got T-shirts and mugs. All sorts of goodies.
So we just got some hoodies, too, but they're not on the website yet. So we'll get them.
Oh, very cool. Goodies and hoodies.
Goodies and hoodies.
All right. So we're back with Paul Hayes. Feel free to call in, everyone.
Yeah,
so Paul,
call in. Give me a heart. Call in, give me a hard time.
I was wondering what you currently have going on as far as research. I know Dan's been taking a break, but you're still holding the torch.
Yeah, yeah. You know how this, you know how brutal this community can really get. You know what I mean? I don't blame him for taking a break. You know, I thought about it my own self, you know. Right now, I don't have a whole lot going on. I really don't have the time, you know. You know, I need to get a hold of those few people, you know, and get out there. I mean, let's see, what is it? Next weekend, I was invited to go on an expedition with Ray Gardner from Midnight Monsters. He's from Ohio. And he's been showing me some pictures and stuff like that. And he's been having some pretty good, you know, evidence from, you know, what he shared with me, you know. So next Saturday I'm going to meet him and go out there and see what he's got.
Cool. What is that, a show or a radio show that he does?
No, he's another group.
Oh, okay.
He's from the group Midnight Monsters. And he lives about an hour from me. Well, the research site's about an hour from me, north of me. So, gosh, am I thinking, there's a lake up north. God, I'm thinking Superior Lake or something up there. And I guess they go out all the time. And, yeah, he invited me to go out. So I kind of set a date, and he's kind of all excited, you know what I mean, because he's been wanting to share some stuff with me here for quite some time, and I just haven't had the time, you know, so.
Well, good.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Takes time and money. We're not getting those government grants yet.
Yeah, I applied. They turned me down. They said, well, are you nuts?
I did like your recent video you did presenting all the things you take in the field squatching.
Yeah, I know. I put that up there, you know, and a lot of people liked it because, you know, a lot of people, you know, they... Even other researchers, you know, kind of you know, they kind of wonder, well, you know, gee, what do you take out or what do you take out, you know? And, you know, so I had a lot of people asking me, well, what do you take? You know what I mean? And then some people just kind of start, they're starting to get into it, you know, they go, well, what do you take? And, all right, let me make a video and I'll show you everything that I take. And, you know, a lot of people liked it, you know, and there was one lady, she's in our group, and, you know, she's just kind of getting into the Bigfoot thing, and she's really interested in it, you know, and she wants to go out and, you know, look around and see what she can find, and, you know, which is great. And she posted a picture the other day. Her daughter got her first research kit. And she got the stuff that she got the idea from my video, you know, mm-hmm. which I thought was kind of cool, you know. I thought that was pretty
cool. That's awesome. You got a lot of stuff in that video. I mean,
I got a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, my backpack is heavy, you know, and I did have somebody. He's another researcher, and he's going, man, you know, if you, you know, you can't take all that, you know. You're over-prepared, and, you know, what do you mean you take toilet paper with you? And, you know, he goes, if you were going on a long hike, man, you know, that all that weight, that's just one less step you're going to take, you know, and just kind of giving me crap over everything I got, you know. And it's like, dude, if I was going to go on a long extended hike, I'd revamp my pack for that. I'm not going to go on a 100-mile hike. You know what I mean? So,
you know what they say about opinions.
You know, there's always somebody. You know what I mean? There's just always somebody out there that,
right,
you know, has to give you a hard time, no matter, you know, no matter what you do. And it's like, you know, I just kind of ignore it and, you know, move on to something else. And, you know, I mean, what, you know, how much is the toilet paper going to weigh? You know what I mean? A couple ounces? I'd rather wipe my butt with that than with a pine cone or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of a story. I watched a documentary on people who do the Appalachian Trail. They, you know, hike the trail. And I guess at one point there is a consumer center or something, and what they do is they allow you to drop some of your load if it's too heavy. And I think the woman there said that a man dropped an entire, like, case of toilet paper.
Oh, my God.
And what they'll do is they will take your belongings that you can't take with you any further, and they'll mail it back to your home, I guess, for you. Or I guess sometimes, you know, people just stop and dump what they don't need. But, yeah, it was – I can't remember exactly how much it was, but it was just an outrageous amount of toilet paper that they had packed and brought with them. I can understand if you need a roll, you're going to be on a day hike or something like that. But, yeah, apparently
right.
This guy dropped, like, a case of toilet paper at the –
Well, you know, what I have is just, you know, I got it in the camping section by Coleman. It's like three little small rolls, you know what I mean, in a little plastic baggie. And
I've seen that. I actually spent some time in that section of the store, and I remember, and it's through the people with the Bigfoot community, I'd rather be safe than sorry. I've not gone anywhere remote or dense forested. But a friend and I were standing in the aisle, and we were looking at magnesium sticks. Just because I heard about them, I like to go out and look at the stuff, you know. So I'm standing there, and I'm going, oh, I've seen this before. What you do is you scrape it, and, you know, it almost acts as tinder, I guess. And then
right.
You strike it. You strike the spark onto it, and it starts a flame. So this guy, who's obviously, like, hugely outdoorsy, he comes up behind us, and he's listening to us talk, and he's involved in the conversation, and he says, so where are you going? And I was like, oh, we're going to go out to the park. And he was so mad. He said, just take a lighter. Because he's under the impression we're, you know, preparing for this huge, like, trek somewhere. And I'm like, we're going to the park. And he was so upset. He said, just take a lighter with you. He's like, you do not need that.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lighter, and I got matches, and I got, you know, my little fire starter thing, you know what I mean? And I mean, it's only a couple bucks, and, you know, so why not? Why not just put it in there? You know, you don't know when your Bic's going to take a crap or whatever, you know, and, you know.
Right. I would rather be more well-prepared than not prepared at all. And
right.
You're right about people giving you crap, because you're going to catch it either way. Either they're going to come at you because you were ill-prepared and should have thought ahead further, or they're going to come at you because you were too well-prepared. So...
rather have it than and not need it than need it and not have it.
Right. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, my pack is heavy, you know, but, you know, I'm not a sissy. So, you know, it's like, you know, stick it in there. And it's like, you know, that H2 recorder, that box, you know, I don't just carry that around in my pack, you know. I carry it to a spot where I think I want it, and, you know what I mean, I place it, and then I don't carry that anymore. And, you know, it's like, you know, a lot of the stuff that I have, you know, it just, it doesn't really weigh that much. But, I mean, you put it all in a pack, it's got some weight to it. But, you know, I've seen people, you know, they're heading out to some remote area, and, my God, they got sleeping bags and tarps and, you know, just everything, you know, on their back. And, you know, and it's like, you know, now that has to be heavy, you know, but. But, yeah, no such thing as being over-prepared, I don't think.
Well, I watched your video. I thought it was good information.
You know, even if you don't need it, but somebody else does, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, you never know. I mean, hell, you could be out somewhere and run into somebody that's, you know, laying by a tree because he, whatever, broke his leg or hurt himself some one way or another, and, you know, something that you carry, you know, might save somebody. You don't know, you know?
That's true.
I know you can never have enough paracord, and that stuff weighs next to nothing.
Good information. So when was the last time that you were out, Paul?
Oh, the last time we were out was probably, well, I think it was just before the festival. We went down to Area 306 down in... Carroll County down there. We went out Saturday, got out there Saturday morning, came back Sunday. You know, we actually, it was interesting because we actually heard some howls. I mean, not close, but we heard some howls. And I tried to record it, but we were using like a parabolic mic, and, you know, it ran off of a 9-volt battery because it needs the voltage to amplify the signal for the headphones. Well, I plugged in my personal recorder into the dish, and then I plugged the earphones into my recorder, and I wasn't even thinking about it. And, you know, we're hearing these, you know, these howls, and, man, I angled that dish right over in that direction. I'm thinking, this is cool because I'm getting these on recorder, you know, and I wasn't even thinking about it. But that 9-volt battery was actually pushing too much voltage into my recorder and caused a squeal, and I can't get it out.
Nope.
I've played with it and played with it. I just can't get that high-pitched squeal out of there and to where you can actually hear the howls. But at the time I thought, man, this is awesome, you know, because we're actually getting this stuff. But, you know, and then, you know, Dan, he was, you know, some people, you know, they think if you talk some type of native language, you know, Bigfoot might respond to it. And then other people think, you know, well, that's just a bunch of crap or whatever. But, you know, Dan does speak a little bit of Iroquois language. And he was speaking some Iroquois language. It was about 11 o'clock at night or something like that. And I had no clue what he was saying. You know what I mean? He knew what he was saying, but I had no clue. And he would speak a little bit of that language, and then we would just all kind of be quiet. And, you know, we actually had, like, a couple whistles come out of the wooded area behind our base camp. And we thought, wow, you know? And, but it was interesting. But that was, like, I think the weekend before the festival was when we went out there. That gentleman had some stuff going on, and, you know, he's actually heard what sounded like something laughing, you know, and he heard it late at night, you know, just plain as day. He said it was so loud, you know. Then he, you know, he's heard some howls himself. He goes, it was a distance away, but, you know, he said they were pretty loud, you know, so. But, yeah, that was the last time I was out, and, you know, between that and, you know, preparing for the festival for that next weekend and, you know, just work and just everything else, I haven't had much time to actually get out. But
I know, that's a challenge of squatting.
Yeah, but next Saturday I'm going out with Ray and his crew and see what we can come up with up there. He sent me some aerial photos of the area that he goes to, and he's actually showed me some pictures of some really nice prints. And these things were deep, you know, in the real soft soil, and I mean, they were just plain as day. You could just count the toes. You could just, I mean, the impression was pretty awesome, you know. And so I'm gonna go out there next Saturday and with them guys and see what we can come up with. Hopefully something good, you know.
Are you going to do the Genasco Fest next year? I know there were some issues with the Latonia.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Latonia is going to do it again. And if I were to do it, you know, with them, they would have to have everything set in stone before I even agreed to it. It would just have to be that way, and there couldn't be no changes, because there was even some changes the, you know, that very weekend while the festival was going on. And, you know, some of the people that came to it, you know, they were just so confused because, you know, they were supposed to meet at a certain area that, you know, was advertised, you know, for the howling contest. So naturally people's, you know, down at the Coke Ovens, they're waiting, you know, for me, which I'm not coming because Latonia changed it to Main Street, you know, during the festival. And, you know, someone had to go down there and tell all these people, hey, you're going to have to come up on Main Street because that's where we're having it now. And so with all the changes, I mean, it did come out pretty good, you know. Could it have been better? Sure. But could it have been worse? Yeah. But, you know, for first time, it came out pretty good. And we had quite a few people show up for that thing. And it was like people from, I don't know, Illinois, New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, you know, they came from all over, you know. Because you could just actually, you know, walk, because the main part of the festival was, you know, pretty much, you know, downtown. And, you know, as you kind of walk through, you know, you could see all the different license plates on people's cars and all that, which, you know, I thought that was pretty cool, you know.
Yeah, sounds like it was a success overall.
Yeah, like I say, it could have been better, but, you know, for the first time, you know, we've never done one, and Latonia's never done one, so, and with all the stuff that got changed and all that, you know, yeah, it was pretty good. People enjoyed it. You could tell people enjoyed it, you know.
Nice. Now, you had your full-on Bigfoot sighting, was that 2011?
Yeah, 2011 was my first one.
Okay. And that was one that was close to your house, and you'd been hearing some sort of noises for a couple of days before?
Yeah, I had the, like the low guttural growl type noise at, you know, 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, what was it? Early morning of the 6th was 2 o'clock in the morning. Then the early morning of the 7th was 1 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, that's what kind of prompted me to go take a walk, you know, on the 9th, a couple days later, because my oldest boy came over after I got home from work. And that's what kind of prompted me to go take a walk, because I wanted to know what the heck was going on, because, you know, I've never heard nothing like that before. And, yeah, the 9th is when, you know, me and my oldest boy, you know, had our sighting. And, you know, he's a pretty big dude, and scared him half to death, you know. It's like he wanted to run out of there, man. And I said, no, don't run. We'll just walk, but don't run. Well, he kind of did one of them walk fast type things, you know what I mean? And it was kind of funny, but yeah, that was my original sighting. But, you know, I had some different activity on and off for the rest of that year up until New Year's Eve. You know, red eye shine and the odor, you know, the one night, you know, we had the garage door open and the wife went out in the garage and she came right back in. She goes, you guys got to come out here. And I'm going, why? She goes, just come out here. So me and my old boy, we were sitting in the family room and we walked out in the garage, and that same odor that we smelled when we had our sighting was the same odor that was inside my garage. And it was so strong, it made your eyes almost water. That's how strong it was. So now I'm thinking, oh, my God, is this thing coming in my garage, or is it coming in my backyard, or what the heck is this thing doing, you know? And that odor dissipated within a matter of, like, a minute, and then it was just totally gone.
Yeah, it's always better when you have a sighting with someone else, I imagine.
Well, you know, and, you know, I admit it, but if it wasn't for him, I'd have never seen it, because he's the one that actually spotted it and then pointed it out. You know, he was just walking in front of me about 6-8 feet in front of me. You know, he just stops dead and he's looking to his left. You know, and then he points over and he goes, look. Well, I couldn't see anything where I was standing. You know, I'm going, man, what, look at what? You know, and he's like, right there. You know, and I kind of hunched down and looked below this limb, and you know, and then there that thing was, about 100 feet from us. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, and it's like, it just freaks you out because of the massive size of that thing, you know. Thing's huge. But, yeah, if it wasn't for him, I'd have never seen it.
What color was the one you saw?
It was like a brownish auburn type, you know, brownish, reddish-brownish type color. And, you know,
what do you
at the
think
time,
it was doing in that area?
Well, you know, that I don't know. I don't know if it was passing through. I don't know if it was hunting for food. You know, I don't think it, you know, stays around here, you know what I mean, for somewhat long periods of time. I don't think that. I think it just happened to be passing through, or, you know, looking for food or something like that, and then just, you know, basically kept on going. But, because, you know, ever since, you know, that's been 2011, ever since, you know, the New Year's Eve, which was going into 2012, I haven't had nothing. I haven't heard anything. I haven't seen anything. Well, I kind of take that back. In the corner of this bean field here, I did take a picture here, like, I don't know, a week ago or something, of something that resembles a large print, about 15 inches long and about 5 inches across. I mean, it looked like a print, and it looked like it had toes. You know, I actually posted that in the group, you know, possible. I mean, it looked like a print, but as far as seeing, you know, physically seeing anything or hearing anything, I haven't. And I constantly keep an eye out. You know, ever since that day, man, I constantly keep an eye out.
What are your thoughts on the musty stink? You think they can turn it on as a warning, or do you think they just smell?
I think, my opinion, I think they just naturally stink, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, you know, what, gorillas and stuff, I guess, can turn that on and off, you know, at will, but I just think that they just naturally stink, you know? I mean, go live in the woods every day of the year and don't take a bath with soap and all that. See how you smell, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
even if they do get in, you know, whatever, a pond or, you know, a creek or whatever, I mean, in Ohio, you know, all these ponds and creeks and small lakes and all, I mean, they're so filthy in Ohio. You know, you don't never see no clear water nowhere in Ohio. It's all just nasty, stinky, dirty, you know.
Yeah,
they have their
own smell, so people are like, well, maybe they bathe in lakes and this and that. Well, I've swam in my share of rivers and lakes, and you come out smelling like something else sometimes.
Yeah, you know, and this thing here, you know, the way it looked, it was all, you know, it was all kind of matted and just nasty looking, you know, and I would just have to say they just, you know, some just maybe smell more than others, you know, I don't know, but I don't know if they have the ability to turn that smell on and off, and I mean, we would know more if we had a specimen, but
course.
You know, but all this stuff that people say these things do, my opinion, I don't believe half of it. I mean, you know, I get people to get mad at me, but you know what? You have your opinion, I have mine, and you know, the turning invisible thing, you know, I just don't believe that, and yeah, you know, just many things I just can't see him having the natural ability to do that, you know?
Well, yeah, and you've seen one in the flesh and blood, and that's what
appeared to you.
And it didn't cloak and disappear when you showed up. And
right. You know, I mean, you know, some people, you know, believe the Bigfoot alien UFO thing. Well, okay. You know, I've got a good friend of mine that, you know, that's what he does. That's what he investigates is Bigfoot and UFOs and, you know, and all that stuff, you know, which is fine, you know. And I even went to one of his presentations because he kept bugging me. Once you come to one of my presentations, I'll prove to you. Okay, I'll go to your presentation. And I went, and he talked about it. And I think Stan Gordon was there, too, and, you know, he's kind of into the Bigfoot UFO type thing, too, and, you know, and I sat there and I listened to all this, and, well, it really still didn't change my mind yet because, you know, I've had a sighting, and a UFO didn't pick him up, and he didn't turn invisible when he had every opportunity to do so. You know, I just... Now, if he was standing there and then I watched him kind of dissipate, then I would have probably ran out the woods. But, I mean, it had every opportunity to do all this stuff that people say these things do, but it didn't, you know. And it's the same with, you know, many other sightings. You know, none of them did none of that, you know. And it's like,
yeah, we don't really know what they do, but at the same time, it almost seems people get frustrated with little results, and it's easy to say this, it did this or that when you can't show any evidence, you know?
Well, yeah, I'll agree. People get frustrated because, you know, some people been going out, you know, 2-3 times, whatever, a week for many, many, many years and never have an encounter. You know, they'll go out for years and never find a print. Or so, yeah, it does kind of get frustrating after a while, you know. But then you have some people that, you know, they say that these things do this and they do that, but they don't even go in the woods at all. You know, they're just going by what they read online. And, you know, you got some people say they do this and they do that, but they've never seen one. You know, so, you know, only thing I can say is, during my, well, both my sightings, you know, the one with Dan, on both encounters, these things didn't do none of that. So the only thing I can say is, you know, I don't think they can, or I don't know if they can, because they didn't do it in front of me, you know.
Yeah,
but, you know,
yeah, I guess that's all we can go with.
Yeah, people can think whatever they, you know, whatever they want to think, or, you know, whatever. I mean, which is fine. You know, I'm not going to argue with anybody about it. If that's what you believe, then that's what you believe. You know, there's people that think I'm full of crap anyway, but, you know, I don't really care. I don't really care. You know, because I know what I had seen that day.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to tell me any different. You know.
It's all, and what are your goals, you know? If your goal is to prove this, I think many researchers and enthusiasts, you know, our goal is to prove this thing. And, you know, science isn't going to jump on board when you're saying it's turning invisible. I don't know. I just think we need to get to the basics if you want to prove it. If you don't want to prove it, you know, whatever. But
you know, some
just
people just want
to. It makes us look even more wacky, I guess, whether it's true or not.
Well, you know, some people just want to prove it to themselves. They're not worried about mainstream science. They just want to prove it to themselves because, okay, maybe they're partial skeptic. Maybe they're partial until they see one. You know, maybe they think there is something out there, but until they see it, they're not really going to totally believe 100%. You know, and you know, here's the thing: when I had my sighting, I wasn't even looking for these things. These things didn't even pop into my mind. I never thought about them. I never, you know, nothing. Until I had my first sighting. Then, and I'll be honest, it was probably a good 3 weeks before I ventured out into them same woods again because I was a little hesitant. You know what I mean? Even though I didn't feel threatened, but I was a little hesitant because I don't know what this thing's capable of doing. But it was like a day or two after my sighting, the first person, I got online, and I didn't know who Bigfoot groups were. I didn't know who ran what. I didn't know anything about it. And ended up that the first group that I contacted was the Southeastern Ohio Society for Bigfoot Investigation, which is run by Doug Waller, okay? And I didn't know Doug. I didn't know these people. I just found them online because they weren't too far from me, and I sent an email. And then Doug contacted me, you know, within 24 hours. And he was the very first person that I told after my sighting, you know, reported it. You know what I mean? And I had no clue who anybody was. You know, I didn't know, you know, now I know there's a guy that investigates, you know, he lives, 15 minutes from me. You know, I know that now, you know, and I know some other you know, people here in Ohio that do investigations and, you know, stuff like that. But just pulling it up online, you know, Doug's group was the first one that came up about Bigfoot investigations. So they're the first one that I contacted, you know. So, but yeah, when I had my sighting, none of that Bigfoot related stuff, none of that was even on my mind. You know, it never even crossed my mind until I had the sighting, and then I'm like, my God, I got to tell somebody, you know? And Doug's group was the first one.
Doug's a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any...
You could have contacted someone who wasn't so good, but you know what? From my own personal experience, I've met a lot of different researchers from Ohio and different groups based in Ohio, and they're all pretty much A-okay, honestly. I don't think I've come across anyone from Ohio that wasn't sincere in their efforts and, you know, all around decent people. I'm sure there are people in Ohio who aren't so nice, but I've not come across them yet.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody knows, you know, about who my first contact was because I just now, you know, told people on a radio show, you know. But, yeah, that was my first contact, you know. And Doug and Shauna and Chuck and, gosh, I can't think of the other lady that was with them. You know, they actually set up a date. They came down to the house, and I took them back there, you know. And, you know, we did some looking around, found a few little interesting things. And, you know, I showed him where this thing was standing, where we were standing. And, you know, they took a bunch of pictures. Of course, I took some pictures, too, and, you know, but, yeah, Doug was the first one, and, you know, I've been in contact with Doug ever since. You know, he's a good friend of mine, and I've actually done, I don't know, a presentation or two, you know, down there at the library where he does his meetings and stuff. You know, I've done some of that stuff with him, too, but, yeah. And then I think after that I actually contacted the BFRO, and I did have a gentleman call me, and I talked to him about an hour on the phone about it, and then he said after he gets back into town, he was going to give me a call and then come investigate it. Well, that fell through, and, you know, I waited and waited and waited and waited, and, man, I waited like, I don't know, a couple years, and then Mark Mazel from the BFRO, he kind of contacted me out of the blue, and he goes, hey, I seen that, you know, this gentleman here kind of dropped the ball on your sighting, so I'm picking it up, you know. And then, so, you know, him and Mark DeWirth, actually.
Yep, they're two good guys, too.
Yeah, so they came down here, and, you know, and I took them back, and, you know, now my sighting's finally on the BFRO database, you know. But, you know, they took the time to come down to check it out, and, you know, and, you know, he estimated, you know, just by what we described, he goes, man, that thing had to have been about 7.5 feet. I said, yeah, that's about what I estimated, you know. And then as far as, you know, the distance between us and it, you know, it was around 100, and Mark's thinking 120 feet, you know, something like that. And, you know, so, but they was actually the second ones I contacted. Then I think after that, talking with Doug and all that, he kind of put me in a Facebook group. You know, he just kind of stuck me in there, you know what I mean? Here, check this out. And then that's how the whole Facebook Bigfoot thing, you know, all came about for me.
Yeah, and it's become quite the big deal, all the groups, and your group's really grown. You're one of the bigger Bigfoot groups on Facebook.
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah,
we're,
I think we're pushing
a good group.
1,100 nice members, something like that. It's getting close. Yeah. And, you know, we
yeah,
just
there's
let
a
the
handful
people
of
join.
Them.
Yeah, we just let the people join. I mean, you know, we don't just, you know, I don't go down through my friends list and just start ticking everybody. You know, we just wait for people to join. If they want to join, that's great. If they don't, well, you know, that's fine too, you know. You know, my group isn't for everybody, you know, because you do got some people out there, they want to join the groups with all the drama crap in it, you know. And I avoid those groups. You know, I avoid those groups, you know.
And you do a good job of keeping your own group free of that sort of behavior without having to go to, you know, extreme extents or, like, ultimate rule to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we just try to keep it user-friendly and, you know what I mean, sometimes, you know, we're jamming along pretty good and, man, we're posting all kind of stuff. And then there's, you know, times like in the past month, you know, I haven't really done that much. I haven't had that much time, but, you know, and, you know, it is what it is. And it's more active in the winter time because everybody's stuck in the house. But in the summer, you know, nice and warm out, you know, people's camping and fishing and swimming and boating and, you know, doing whatever. And, you know, which is to be expected. And so everything does kind of slow down, you know, quite a bit. But
yeah, you ever do any research in winter down there? I mean, does anyone?
I do.
It seems like it would be a good time since you got a lot of
wood. I do very little because I can't stand the cold weather. I cannot stand cold weather. You know, I just can't stand it. I mean, once in a while, I'll take a walk out through the woods here or something. I think there was like a time or two me and Dan and Sue actually took a drive around Columbiana County where there had been a sighting or two. And, you know, and it was really cold. I think it was like 4 degrees out or something. And, you know, we went out and took a little ride, and then we got out and walked around just for a little bit, and then, you know, that was it. Yeah, wintertime, I can't stand the cold.
I hear that.
Yeah, and this past winter, it was just relentless, and I don't imagine that Bigfoot were too openly walking around either, because I'd imagine they also get cold or freeze. And it was just a bitter cold winter. Bitter. I don't remember anything like it ever.
I hope they hibernate up here.
The winter was rather brutal this year.
Yes.
For last year, I should say, whatever. But, you know, it still, you know, reminds me of, you know, how many caves and mines that we have on the eastern side of Ohio. You know, last time I checked, just the ones that they know about, there's like 810 mines and caves on the eastern side of Ohio. And, you know, in the winter and stuff, I'm just wondering if these things don't use them.
Yeah.
You think that they move out of the area during the winter?
What's that?
Do you think that they move out of the area? I think that they are more migratory when based on weather.
Yeah, and I think they kind of, you know, follow the food source too, you know.
Right.
Because I'll tell you, you know, in the wintertime around here, there's nothing, you know. Not unless it would go raid a farm, you know, and get some corn or something, but there's nothing around here. You know, so I would say they have to come in the wintertime. You know, they would have to migrate somewhere else. You know, I'm thinking they, just my opinion, but, well, I'm thinking they go, you know, they travel up north or something, you know, but.
Yeah, they can't really migrate south where I live because they'd run into Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So I think they're kind of stuck in one area. You know,
zone. I think these things are moving north and south anyway. You know, because
they can minorly migrate here.
You know, just by the reports that we've gotten and looking at other reports, you know, the people say they would be on this road, you know what I mean, and they're heading, you know, this way, and this thing ran, you know, from the right side of the road to the left side of the road, you know, and then you kind of just piece it all together and go, well, it was going north, you know what I mean, or this one was going south. You know, very few reports are these things going east and west. You know, it's like they're always going north or
south.
That's
interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You have reports across all of Ohio, too, huh, whereas we primarily have reports in one section of the state, the coniferous forest.
From what I've looked at least in the PFRO website, the reports out of Ohio are predominantly east.
Okay.
And it seems like there's almost like a corridor, not quite all the way east, but like 2 to 3 counties in, which is interesting.
Is that where the Ohio River is, or is it, it's hilly over there, isn't it?
Where's that?
Eastern Ohio.
Yeah, it's pretty hilly over here. I mean, we don't have, you know, mountains, but it's just, you know, constant hills, and, you know, it's not very flat at all.
It looks like there's some big sections, you know, too, between major roads, big pieces of land.
Oh, yeah. It looks like Night Watchers wants to know what my thoughts are on game trackers. What do you mean by game trackers?
You're by Latonia, aren't you?
No, I'm an hour from Latonia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Latonia's about an hour from me.
So what county are you in?
Oh, what are you?
What county?
Yeah.
I'm Stark County.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on game cams?
Well, I mean, I have one. I don't use it all the time. But, you know, what I like to do with mine is I like to get it up as high as possible. I don't like to just walk up to a tree, strap it on the side, you know, 5 foot off the ground or whatever. The last time when we went down to Area 306, there was the one camera. Well, I had my oldest son and Dan trying to boost me up a tree, and I put it probably about 12 feet up. And then there was, Dan's camera. And then my trail camera, I walked a little deeper into the woods, and I ended up getting mine about 20 feet up in the air. I like to put them high and angle them down. And then, of course, it'll cover a larger area that way, too. But I have one. You know, I don't put it out and leave it out, or, you know, I don't constantly put it up every time, you know, we go out or anything. But once in a while, you know, I don't know if these things can see these trail cams or the flash, or, you know, I don't know if they can or not, but you know, they say deer can't see them, you know, the flash, but I've seen many, many pictures of deer staring right at the trail cam when it snapped the picture, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, they could be going in those caves, because you guys have a lot of deciduous woods, so when the winter comes, there's no leaves on the trees. You can see right through those woods.
Right.
Whereas the Pacific Northwest and northern Minnesota, we got a lot of thick coniferous stands with pines, or they stay, you know, hard to see through the whole year.
Right. You know, down in Salt Fork, you know, there's a lot of caves down there. I mean, there's a lot of them. You know, then coming up north, I mean, there's some, but, you know, mainly abandoned mines heading up north. And like I say,
that sure as hell being a cave.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, in the hot summer, man, it'd be cool in there. And, you know, in the winter, I mean, you'd get out of the elements and the wind and stuff like that, you know.
But
I wouldn't doubt that they use them.
sounds like you said that the food source leaves the area, though, so I would think that they wouldn't stick around. I mean, regardless.
Well, I'm just wondering if they use these to get from point A to point B without being seen.
Sure, when they're in the area, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, just to get to different areas without being seen, you know, especially in the winter time where there, you know, there's no leaves, there's no vegetation, there's no
nothing. The deer stick around, though, don't they?
You know, some do. Like this past winter, you know, normally we would see quite a few deer, but this past winter, man, I don't recall not seeing not even one. So I was just thinking, you know, this past winter, as bad as it was, if they moved on somewhere else, because normally the deer will come up through my backyard. And I have a mulberry tree that sits at the edge of my, you know, property line, you know, at the end of my property, and the deer will come up there and eat all the berries off the ground that fell off the tree. You know, and that's how many deer we would have come through here. But last winter, I don't recall even seeing one.
Oh, maybe it was too cold and they were hunkering down more. Well, it looks like we're down to our last couple minutes. Thanks for joining us again, Paul.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on the show again.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Yep.
Good luck on all your future endeavors.
Yeah, here pretty soon I'll be getting out a little bit more. I like getting out in the fall. That seems to be like, you know, the hot time is in the fall. Not only that, it's not so hot, though. You know, get out and walk around, you know, but it's like summertime. It just kind of dies down around here a little bit, you know.
Nice. Thanks, everyone, for joining us in the chat room. And join us next week as we welcome Tracy Arnold to the show. He's a researcher out of West Virginia, or actually Virginia, I believe. And he has had several encounters over the last few years. And if you have a subject or topic or guest you would like us to have on, just give us a call, give us a message, and we'll see what we can do. And we'll see you next week for another episode of Monster X Radio. You guys have anything else you'd like to say?
No, just thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Cool, Paul.
Thanks again, Paul.
All right, see ya.
Yep, y'all take care.
Congratulations to Angela. Must be related to Paul Hayes. So she picked Bigfoot Blend. So she'll be getting that week.